Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, prayerprescriptions.com, and creator of Kate Loving's Prayer Podcast. My guest this evening is Mark Allen, author of Tantra for the West, The Magical Path, The Greatest Secret of All, Visionary Business, and Others. He is an internationally renowned seminar leader, entrepreneur, author, and composer. He co-founded New World Library with Shakti Gawain and guided the company as president and publisher from a small startup to its current position as a major player in the independent publishing world. He leads seminars in Northern California and gives teleseminars reaching people all over the world. You can see him online at markallen.com, markallen.com. or newworldlibrary.com. Please join me in welcoming Mark Allen. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Kate. Gee, that introduction makes me sound like some kind of type A monster. In reality, I'm very lazy. I'm very disorganized. I don't do all that much. I guess it just adds up over time.
Well, when I said a major player, I thought that could not be anything that Mark would say.
Right.
how's everything going with you? This book is just wonderful.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I just want to say, first of all, I want to thank you because we've all these years, you know, I've been into the New Age movement for many years, and Tantra has always been associated with sex. And
yes.
as such, it just doesn't appeal to many people. You know, you might try to get into it and it doesn't really work. And I want to thank you because the Tantra yoga that you represent in your book is something that we can use to harmonize and integrate all of our varied selves and finally come to know who we really are. Whereas before, I thought it was just completely unrelated to anything almost anybody I know was associated with.
Right. In my 20s, I spent almost 4 years at a Tibetan Buddhist center studying Tantra, Tantric Buddhism, he kept calling it. And then after I left, I spent another about 4 or 5 years making all these notes to myself to see how could I apply these teachings in my life in America today? How can we adapt Tantra for the West? And that's how the book was born. It's very practical, a long time ago, and it's very practical. And what I finally realized, what they're talking about in Tantra is the path of every moment of your life, rejecting nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I got that from your book. In fact, right now we're having a major thunderstorm, and it's like the Tantra of thunder.
Right. Yes, yes.
Well, now, when you say rejecting nothing, how can we face negative emotions without denying or defying them specifically through Tantra?
You know, that's a great practice is to really get into our negative emotions without denying, without making excuses, just really seeing what they are. I remember at the Tibetan Center one day the teacher from Tibet took us all down in the basement in this room without any windows, and we sat around in a big circle, and he said, imagine your mother is in the center of that circle and she's just died. How do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing couple hours we spent exploring that feeling of grief. Mm-hmm. Amazing. And it really taught us. As I left there, I realized what he's talking about is going into every emotion as it arises, getting in the middle of it. He even used a wonderful analogy. One time he said, we're all on a path up the mountain, and our path is sometimes covered with poison, like poison ivy or poison oak. And he even said in Tibetan, the word for poison is the same as for the so-called negative emotions of anger, of fear, of jealousy, of greed. They're called poisons in Tibetan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we come up our path, and there's poison across the path. Well, he said, there's three different types of people and three different types of paths, and they're totally valid. They're all valid. The first is the monk or the nun comes up the path, sees the poison, and immediately goes the other way. And that's a perfect path for some people. That's a fine path. Then the awakening being, the bodhisattva comes up the path, and he or she just plows through the poison and goes up the path, up to the awakening of all humanity. And that's a wonderful path. Then the final path is the tantra, the path of tantric. The tantric yogi comes up the path, sees the poison, and immediately goes into the center of the poison, even though it takes him or her off their path, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
he meant, whatever arises, get into the center of it. Get into the deep, go into it as deeply as you can. Because if you go real deep inside it, he said everything has three levels of being. It's outer, inner, and secret. Outer, even an emotion, you can say, like the easiest example would be our bodies. You know, it has an outer emotion, an outer mm-hmm. look. We're a certain height and weight and everything. Then an inner, amazing collection of all these organs and this bone and muscle, and you go inner more deeply, what is it? Well, it's a bunch of cells, and you go inner more deeply. It's where Buddhism gets totally scientific. Like mm-hmm. Einstein even said, Buddhism was the only religion that holds up to science. It is scientific. Mm-hmm. You go into the inner deeply enough, and you get to the secret. What's the secret of it all? We're composed of atoms and subatomic particles, and it's almost empty space. Like Buddhists have been chanting for 2,500 years, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. So you get into the inner enough, and you see the secret, which is it's empty, empty, and it changes. And that's true of every emotion, too. If you mm-hmm. get into the depths of your fear, those fears change.
Yeah, and they transform, right?
Yeah, they transform. They absolutely transform. After I left the Tibetan Center, I wandered around the spiritual smorgasbord of Berkeley, California, we call it. And I wandered into these workshops led by a man named Ken Kise Jr. He had written a book called Handbook to Higher Consciousness. And
right.
that, you know, adapted a lot of the Eastern teachings to the West very practically. And he would start our weekend work. He'd do these weekend workshops. He'd start by asking if anyone had a headache in the group. And there'd be 40, 50, 60 people. Somebody would have a headache. They'd raise their hand. And then he'd do what he called consciousness focusing. What happens when we have a headache? We usually say, oh, I have a headache. We resist it. We don't want to deal with it. You know, we head for the Tylenol or whatever. That's our usual reaction. Instead, he said, get into that headache. Let's focus on that headache. He'd ask the person, exactly where is that headache? And they'd have to close their eyes and say, okay, it's sort of located in the center. And he said, what shape is it? Well, it's kind of like, does it have a color? How does it feel? And he kept asking question after question, repeating a lot of the questions, and inevitably, after like 10 minutes, the person would say, well, it's kind of shifting. It's kind of lightening up. And then they'd say, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
By totally focusing on anything that arises, including and especially painful things, if we really get into it, if we really embrace it without resisting it, it changes, it transforms.
Right. The tantra of headaches.
Yes, right. The tantra of headaches. Get into it. The same thing happened to me in a dentist chair. I had a lot of dental work as a kid and had a lot of painful experiences. And I remember it was about maybe mid-30s. I was sitting in the dentist chair, he was drilling, and I realized I hated that pain. And I realized I'd always been rejecting it and just bearing it. And instead I thought, wait, let me get into the pain. What is this pain exactly? What is it? And suddenly
yeah.
It was like electricity going through my whole body. It was like he was jolting me with something. It was amazing. And as soon as I quit resisting it and just said, okay, this is what's happening this moment, it completely shifted. It wasn't pain exactly. It was energy coursing through every cell of my body.
Did you do that dental work without Novocaine?
At the time, I don't remember if he gave me anything, but it was pain. It hurt, whatever it was. He
yeah.
didn't give me enough.
I'll never forget the time I had the same experience that you're describing, but I told the dentist specifically not to give me anything over the course of the work that he was doing, you know, after many visits. And it hurt him more than it hurt me because I was doing what you're explaining, you know, this thing about getting into it and not rejecting it. And he was so freaked out about it, he said, I can't not give you medicine. I was so ridiculous.
So you have to tell him, hey, don't resist, don't reject my pain, accept
yeah,
it.
Yes, get into my pain. Basically, you know, detach.
Right. Yes.
Well,
yes.
You talk about dreams, you know, dreams. How can we move into the life of our dreams through tantra?
Dreams are amazing. I mean, the focus of tantra is really that every moment of our life is part of our spiritual practice and growth, if we look at it that way. So that includes our dreams. Both our conscious dreams, which I've written a lot about in The Magical Path and in Visionary Business and in The Millionaire Course, I say, you know, create a dream consciously, dream your ideal scene and go for it. And that's a very powerful spiritual practice to really make a goal and go for it. And my other books are a lot about that. And there's a little of that in Tantra. But also our dreams at night are amazing. A good technique is before you go to sleep, as you're laying in bed, say, I will remember my dreams and their meaning will become clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. If you do that, you'll remember more and their meanings will become clear. And you'll find, at least in my experience, there's three types of dreams, it seems. One, there's the amazing ones that go on and on and on and seem to be just sort of like my waking life where I'm just doing stuff and it's kind of strange and my feeling is, you know, some days I've even gotten up and gone to work in my dreams and sat there and done stuff and, you know, they don't seem to have any real deep meaning to them when I get in them. Any more than life itself. You know, it's just saying this is your life, kind of. But another kind of dream, then, are those dreams that bring up some kind of fear and nightmares and the dreams where we're scared or we lose something valuable or, you know, we're wandering around naked not knowing where we're going or whatever those are. And those are amazing dreams to get into because we're actually really working through our fear. We're doing really great therapy.
Yeah.
There was a famous study in England where they deprived people of their dreams. They let them sleep, but as soon as their eyes started moving, they would wake them, and they deprived them of their dreams. And after a week, all these, they got very normal, regular, balanced people. And after a week, they were starting to exhibit weirdness. And after a couple weeks, some of them were flipping out psychotically.
Mm-hmm.
because the dreams are really great therapy, especially those fear dreams. And then there's the third kind of dream. If you really pay attention, and you know, we're all on a spiritual path, so if you, the more you're focusing on it, there will be dreams that absolutely take you further up your spiritual path. Amazing, enlightening dreams. We have them. And just one or two of them can change our lives. They're that powerful.
Yes, and Tantra, as you say, is the whole experience. And dreams are help us connect with all other parts of our lives. It seems that when we purposely are running around too much and we don't remember our dreams, that aspect of life is makes life so two-dimensional. It's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and dreams are so fun. They're fascinating, aren't they? And they're fun to remember. That's the first thing I do in the morning. I just wake up and lay there and try to remember my dreams. And I even tell, there's something they call grabbing the snake by the tail in Eastern mm-hmm. teachings, where if you can't remember your dream, just try to remember the last image or something near the end, any kind of image from the end. And then if you can remember, you can grab hold of that. It's the tail of the snake. And then you can work backwards and remember mm-hmm. a whole mm-hmm. lot more of your dream.
Yeah, that's very artful. It really is.
Dreams are wonderful therapy. And everything in the book, Tantra for the West, it shows how every realm of our life we can look at as therapy. I finally mm-hmm. realized studying mm-hmm. Buddhism is not a religion in any sense that we understand it. There's nothing to believe at all. It is very scientific. His last words, Buddha's last words were, "Don't take any word I say and believe it because I said it, but test it with your own experience and make sure it's true for you." It's very scientific therapy. And so I look at every area of our lives as our therapy, you could mm-hmm. say. You know, how can we use relationships for therapy? How can we use sex for therapy? How can we use just daily life and being alone and aging and healing? And if you ask that question, you start discovering answers.
That's beautiful. How can you use Tantra to love being where you are, even if you hate it?
That's a great question. Yeah, you end up, how can you accept the unacceptable? As Eckhart just said in a video, it's all about... That's a great Zen koan. If you can accept the unacceptable, you're there. That's all you need mm-hmm. to do in life. If you can accept what is, thoroughly, completely accept what is, there's nothing else you need to do. It's a very simple path.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, Eckhart summed it up brilliantly in The Power of Now. He said, "To offer no resistance to life is to be in a state of grace, ease, and lightness." I use that mantra over and over through Tantra for the West. I keep repeating these mantras, these English affirmations. In English, we say affirmations. I keep repeating these things because that's what I do in my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
I really wrote the book for myself. It started as...
Well, thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for appreciating it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
You carry affirmations in your pocket.
Yes, I do. I carry them around. The day I turned 30, I dared to dream my ideal scene. And even though I was overwhelmed with doubts and fears, I made a list of goals. And then I rewrote them as affirmations. The first one is, "I am being guided by spirit every moment." And then the next one is, "I'm building a wonderful company." And it goes on my list of goals as affirmations, and I've carried it with me ever since, and it's all come true.
You write your goal, and then you turn it into an affirmation.
Yes. that it is now coming into being. So I was sitting, I was broke. I had, when I turned 30, I had no job, no income whatsoever, no family support. I was in a little teeny tiny slum apartment. And I started affirming, I am now creating a wonderfully successful business that supports me and many others abundantly and produces mm-hmm. books that change my life and change the world, change lives and change the world. I started affirming that. And, yes, every one of my goals I affirm as an affirmation. And I've done that since I was 30. And by the time I was 35, that list of affirmations had become my reality.
That is a very, very good piece of advice to everybody who's listening or will be listening, that you don't need to listen to the old school paradigms about you need money to make money, or you know, all the other lines of crap that people buy. It doesn't, that they can't get anywhere because of it.
Right, right. I remember walking around my house, and I even asked myself, I said, well, I'm really lazy and disorganized, and like I don't do Mondays, I don't do mornings, and that's part of my ideal, to be lazy. And but I remember thinking, do I deserve this success even, or whatever? And I got this answer that I put in Tantra for the West, because it applies to everyone and everything. The answer I got, the words I got in my mind were, Christ said, ask and you shall receive, period. Mm-hmm. He didn't say ask and you shall receive if you deserve it, or if you're talented enough, or if you have enough money, or if you have enough luck, or if, or whatever. He didn't say that. There's no qualifying things there. Ask mm-hmm. and you shall receive, period. That's a great teaching.
Yeah, it is true that there's nothing that's required of you
right.
over and beyond just asking.
Yeah, yeah. I love looking at successful people, whether it's even material success or spiritual accomplishment. There's real similarities in there. And I love just mm-hmm. seeing how they've gotten to where they are and how different we all are and how different each path is. We are totally unique, and it doesn't work to copy another's path. We need to find our own within.
Mm-hmm.
So over and over and over in Tantra for the West, from the very first little exercise, which is just really asking yourself what you're feeling and getting in and exploring that feeling, or asking yourself even what you're thinking, becoming really aware of your thoughts and feelings. Every exercise is directed within and just ends up connecting us with our own internal wisdom. We all have
yes.
a conscious awareness within, and when we ask it the right questions, we'll get answers from within. And those are the best answers, better than any teacher, any book, any course, any friend, any psychic. The best answers are from within us, of course.
Yeah, you go through some great questions in the book about how people can actually ask the question to receive the kinds of answers that are totally meaningful for them.
Yes, yes.
Have you ever heard of Father Gregory Boyle, who rehabilitates gang members in South Central Los Angeles?
Oh, I think I heard something.
He's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, he says that would you rather have the I love you no matter what God, or he calls it the no matter what God, or the one false step God?
Or the what? What was the second?
The one false step God.
Oh, what? Yes, right. That's a great question.
That's totally Tantra. You know, that's real Tantra
yep.
right there.
Yep, yep.
To me, that epitomizes really what Tantra is. It isn't that you have to do anything other than being yourself, and certainly you can't look for anybody else to love you if you don't love yourself. And it's all very profound.
Yes,
really.
It embraces any any and all other traditions, if you get something good from some spiritual tradition or anything or any teacher or any, that's all, it's all good, it's all wonderful. But I say in the book, there's a good rule of thumb. If the teacher or the religion or the book or the psychic, if they help you resolve more neuroses than they create, they're good. But if they start creating more neuroses than they dissolve, then forget it. And I love what he just said about God. It's like, yes, these religions that have this vengeful God that will damn you to hell forever if you blow it, I think that belief creates more neurosis and bad behavior than it resolves.
That is so sad. I mean, I just heard a story this evening of a gentleman, a young man who is dying, and there's a huge deathbed vigil, but he's so afraid that he isn't saved. To me, that was the most tragic part of the story. I mean, oh my God. Well, actually, when he does pass, he will be very happy because he will see that there is the no matter what God and not the one false set God. He will see that.
Right,
and so
right.
That's what's really cool about it.
Yeah. And I bet he'll find it just before he passes, but hopefully even more, like before he passes away, I bet he'll connect with a real loving, loving, loving creator, or however you put it, a source, our source.
Yes.
I had a near-death experience, and it was an ecstatic journey. It was beautiful.
Hmm. What happened exactly?
Oh, I was in a play when I was 21. We toured the country. We played off Broadway for 6 weeks, in fact. And it was this wild adaptation of Faust. And we all played Faust at different times. And I played him as a scientist, like Galileo, who's persecuted because of his beliefs. And they hung me on stage. And they had a gallows, and they had a rope around my neck, and they threw me off. And I had other ropes supporting me, so I wasn't supposed to die in the process. But the last two times we did it, it happened two nights in a row, too, the exact same thing. The ropes were out of adjustment or something, but because they threw me off this, I was thrown through the air, and then the rope cut into my neck.
And, oh, this is really sad. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was dying. And yeah. I was immediately flying over these beautiful hills covered with trees, flying really fast. And I even looked around and realized I didn't have a body, but I had total consciousness, just as conscious as I am now. It's just like this much awareness. We're here. Oh, okay, I was there. I had thoughts and even emotions, kind of, but I didn't have a physical body.
Right.
And I was on to my next life, and it was wonderful. It went on and on. I went on a whole journey and everything. And
that's so exquisite. So then they cut the rope around your... Probably everybody was panicked, weren't they, when they saw
Yeah,
because
I was doing all these movements that normally I just hung there silently through the whole next scene. But instead I was dying up there, spazzing out, which I don't know if that's a... I guess it's a politically incorrect word to say. But whatever I was doing was out of control.
Yeah,
and fortunately the director ran and got a ladder and ran up the ladder and hauled me out. And fortunately, he was a big, strong guy, and he hauled me. And the play was so weird; people didn't even know that this wasn't part of the play. They just thought, "Oh, isn't that?" That was how strange and wild this play was. I could die on stage.
I'm telling you, this is a great story. I love
it. Yeah. Yeah, what a great bit of acting Mark did in the ropes. They're spazzing, turning blue in the face. That's pretty good.
Hey, I'm glad that somebody realized that it wasn't. So,
what
did it feel like coming back in?
You know, I didn't want to come back. When I finally realized laying out on the stage, at first I couldn't even remember who I was. And it was, oh, this is Mark Allen? Oh, I'm in a play? How silly. It seemed very silly and childish to be in a play. And I realized, oh, I'm coming back. And the feeling I had was, oh, wait, I had just gone to graduate school, and I'm being pulled back into kindergarten again. But I've been through this. It was like, that was my feeling. Is I don't want to do this. I want to graduate. I want to get on to that next life. I really wanted to go back there. But this inner knowing said, no, it's not your time. You've got something else. And I knew what it was. Very shortly after that, I realized I'm here to say my own words, to find whatever platform I have in life, whatever way to do it. I'm here to say my own words and not to just repeat other people's words as an actor. And that's when I quit acting. That's when I left.
Well, now, did you say the same thing happened the next night?
Yes, the same thing. Two nights in a row, exactly the same.
But this time they were a little bit more seasoned in knowing that it happened again.
Maybe, maybe the director got the ladder faster. I don't know. But to me, I had the exact same experience two nights in a row, flying around. And then I went into this funnel, and I was whirling around. And I remember even thinking, gee, if I had a stomach now, maybe I'd be sick to my stomach because I was whipping around. You know, I had those kind of thoughts and feelings.
Well, the second time you must have thought somehow it was more familiar, and you were thinking, "Oh, maybe this is my second chance. This is maybe this time it will really work."
I think I did. It was like I was doing it anew. It was like I'd forgotten it already. It was exactly the same. It was discovering it exactly the same. It was very strange and very good for me. It really helped dissolve any fears of death. It's wonderful. If we have a fear of death, a great exercise, a great form of tantra, if you want to use that word, you don't have to use that word, but it's just to really explore that and really get into that. I'm afraid of dying. What am I afraid of? Well, I'm afraid of the pain, of a long bunch of pain. Okay, and get into that. Well, we don't know whether we'll experience pain, and it does absolutely no good to fear something before we've encountered it. We realize that when we look at stuff. We don't want to be like Mark Twain was with fear. He said near the end of his life something like he realized throughout his life he was filled with so many fears, and 99% of them never came true. And those that did, and he had some tough things happen. He went bankrupt. He lost his big house. He lost his daughter even. So he had some things to really fear. But he said, looking forward to any kind of fear, imagining any kind of fear, was a total waste of time. So in other words, fear is a waste of time. Fear is useless. Except, I mean, there's a certain great fear. If a saber-toothed tiger is chasing us, yes, it's very good to be filled with fear because we're filled with adrenaline, and it's a good survival thing.
That's right. Well, isn't the root of all fear the fear of death?
I think so. And when we get into that fear of death deeply enough, we see we're all going to die, and we're all going to handle it, you know, one way or another. Most of us will die with grace, ease, and lightness. Most of us will accept that moment. Maybe just right up to that moment we might resist. But at a certain moment, nearly everyone accepts the inevitable, and then is filled with grace, ease, and lightness. And so what is there to fear of death? It's inevitable. It's part of life. The fact that we were born means we're going to die and pass on. And so there's nothing to fear in it.
Right. So how do you use Tantra every day and every way in your own life?
That's what the whole book is about. But looking at every moment of your life as part of your practice. So it's just a mindset. And that's why it is called the direct path, because you're working on it 24/7, so it does have results quickly. If you're in an argument with your partner, that's your meditation at the moment. Your meditation, you're meditating on arguing, and you're looking at your own frustration and anger, and that's the most powerful meditation you can do in that moment. And then once you go through that, I have an argument settling technique, guaranteed to settle arguments. But it involves, it involves really being able to look at everything, every part of ourselves. We're incredible beings. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience. Mm-hmm. We're all these wonderful, multifaceted beings. And what happens as we grow up, there's parts of us we don't like, and there's parts of us we'd rather not deal with, and there's parts of us we lock away and try to disown, as some therapists said. There's disowned parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And those are the parts that create the problems. And some people just need a good therapist for this. Good therapy is great. It dissolves neuroses, because good therapy just allows you to do what you can just do yourself. Just open the door and really examine those fears, or examine those parts of yourselves that you're rejecting. What's going on there? And you finally, when you get into the inner part of that, when you really get inside any feeling, it does lead to the wonderful secret of enlightenment. It's empty. Everything mm-hmm. is empty. Our bodies are empty space. That is reality. You know, we seem very solid. We seem so solid to our eyes. We have these bodies that they even die and decay, and you know, they seem very solid, and then they decay, and that seems to be the total truth of our lives, but it's not at all. We're also, mm-hmm. you know, we're composed of these atoms. We're part of this quantum field of energy. We're pure energy, in a way, you could say. That's reality. We're empty. We are empty space. That's what is. So even our fears are empty.
Right.
Everything is empty, and everything changes. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form.
Well, I've read almost all of your books, and it seems like they have all culminated into this one, because Tantra, the Tantra of everything, is what you've been saying all along, but you have really encapsulated it and crystallized it in this book.
It is very interesting. I think The Magical Path, too, said everything, and I think Visionary Business said everything about business, and Millionaire Course says everything about abundance. But I'm glad to hear you say that.
Mm-hmm.
It is a revision. I wrote it in my early 30s.
And wow, then, that's right. I forgot about
and
that.
Yeah, and it did, you know, it did well then, but then it went out of print. And I kept getting requests for it, and people just said, why isn't it just an e-book at least? And so I finally rewrote from page one. I really revised the entire thing, and I did try to sum up everything. I tried to sum it up right at the beginning of the book very mm-hmm. clearly. I just say, any activity whatsoever, if gone into deeply enough, leads to ultimate understanding, freedom, and peace. Any and every activity, that is the path of Tantra, as I understand the word. And that's why it is a direct path, because it involves everything, and especially the frustrating things. And the one phrase I write in there that I like is, in our darkest moments, our brightest treasures are found.
It is so beautiful. Yes. And when people say that somebody has died, and people say, I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
Well, whenever there's a loss, there's a gain. You know, you have to start thinking, or you don't have to, but it's the Tantra helps you to start thinking in ways that get rid of the duality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I like the way you said that. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I know
we're drawing to the end here because this Blog Talk Radio will just cut us off, and that's not very satisfying. But I really love talking with you, Mark Allen. You are so awesome. And I just think that, you know, I have always thought you were, I would just love to meet you in person sometime.
We'll have to do that sometime.
Yes, that would be something I would look forward to. So peace to you and peace on earth, and have a beautiful afternoon in Northern California. And blessings.
Thank you so much. You have a great thunderstorm, too, and
oh,
whatever
very
else.
Awesome.
The,
yeah.
Yeah. But thanks so much. I love your show. I love the phrase Collective Wisdom Radio. That's wonderful.
Oh, thanks. Wonderful. I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.